Welcome to the podcast. As a listener, you're invited to claim your comp pass for our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. By attending, you'll join our engaged community of founders and executives from over 200,000 leading B2B global organizations. AI won't take your place, but a competitor leveraging it to drive results will. Learn the latest in AI first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to secure your pass. I'd like to welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Consulting Spotlight. I am your host, Michael Bernzweig, the founder of Software Oasis. And this week, we're actually fortunate to be joined live by Jason Willis-Lee. He's the founder of The Entrepreneurial Translator. And with that, Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Michael. It's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And I can tell by some of the questions that came in before the episode that there's a lot of interest in this topic as we're covering some of the details of AI in the language services industry. So with that, I was hoping for any of our listeners that may not be familiar with either yourself or the Entrepreneurial Translator, can you give us a little bit of your backstory and your journey along the way, as well as a little bit about what's going on over there at the Entrepreneurial Translator and what you do?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So my name is Jason Willis-Lee. I'm based in Madrid, Spain. Although I originally hark from the UK, I grew up in Birmingham, the second city of the UK. I originally started training as a doctor, Michael, so I got to year four of a medical training before I thought, you know what, I really want to go into applied linguistics. So I did, and I became a scientific translator, translating medicine from Spanish and French to English. My niches are clinical trials, medical reports, and research for academic journals. And here at the Entrepreneurial Translator, I've diversified a little bit. You mentioned AI. AI has really taken my industry by storm, or a lot of industries, yours as well. So we're heavily impacted by AI. And I just started diversifying, and I'm creating a niche for myself in linguistic validation, which is, it's kind of cognitive debriefing. It's all the clinical trials, questionnaires that go into different languages for a clinical trial. Most trials are oncology these days, which is cancer. And that's what I'm doing, creating a space for myself there and trying to use AI and leverage it. And we talked a bit before hitting record about customizable GPTs and how that kind of thing can be leveraged to work smarter, not harder. I'm all about squeezing the maximum amount of juice, Michael, from the business orange.
Sure. So how does, I guess, probably one of the biggest questions that a lot of people are wondering is, how does the word entrepreneurial wrap itself around all of the focus of translation, and where does that come into the equation?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's a really great question. The answer is that most service providers don't think of themselves as entrepreneurs, Michael. So what I find is that people struggle with entrepreneurship. You know, they think about the supply side of the business and being a great translator or a great editor, or a great copy editor. They don't really build demand for the business. If you're not building demand, it's very difficult to have a successful business. It's this idea of a busy hot dog stand after a football match in a corner of a stadium. So I took my friends a few years ago to see Seville play Barcelona.
Sure.
And there was a hot dog stand at the end, and you know, that kind of business is just going to sell out because you're serving a hungry crowd, right? So even if the hot dogs are substandard, I mean, those that day was, they were pretty good. That business is going to be fine. The airline business, for example, how many times have you flown on a flight that's half empty? I mean, they have to fly the planes, but these profit margins, I think airlines make about 3%. It's not great, the profit margin. So you really want to turn your business into an oversubscribed business where demand exceeds supply. And it's like a busy, it's a summer ice cream truck, Michael. You've got this long queue of people waiting for an ice cream. And the boy that goes up and says, can I have two flakes for one? Well, that day he's going to be disappointed because there's just so much demand.
Yeah, so I kind of say to you, Absolutely. Jason, when you say the word entrepreneurship, you're absolutely calling my name, because at the end of the day, a lot of, just like you said, I mean, the fundamentals of business are so key. No matter what you're doing, it really touches every aspect of our society. And where we are just outside of Boston, obviously we have a lot of universities and a lot of entrepreneurship. Actually, my alma mater, Babson College, one of the top entrepreneurship schools in the U.S., and a lot of different entrepreneurs have come out of that institution for all types of different businesses that we know and love. So, I guess the other question, you know, as far as your medical and life sciences background, what made you focus on the whole concept of translation, and how did your background kind of point you in that direction as to an opportunity or a challenge to solve?
Yeah, that's another great question, Michael. There's a little story behind that. When I was an Erasmus student in Strasbourg in 1996, I did a period of 3 months in Strasbourg. I was studying orthopedics, geriatrics, and rheumatology. And I met a rheumatology professor who would basically kind of use me to write his articles in English. He'd give me snippets of the article each day, clearly just cut it down into phrases. And I realized very quickly I had the medicine, I had the English skills to help him. And I thought, well, could I do this as a living? Could I be a scientific translator? So that's when I kind of left clinical medicine. I went into clinical research. And then shortly after that, I went into applied linguistics. So that's how I kind of, the first seed planted in my mind was when in my early 20s, I think I was 21, and that Erasmus year. So I later wrote to that French rheumatology professor to offer my services. Unfortunately, he didn't answer. But I wanted him to know that he was quite an important landmark for me, a milestone in my journey.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously, AI is revolutionizing a lot of industries, as you mentioned earlier, translation as well. And I know translation is literally just a component of localization, which is something that every single organization needs to get their hands around if they're moving to different markets, different countries, and it's one important component. So I think especially for organizations that have highly technical solutions that they're bringing to market in different countries, having somebody with an entrepreneurial understanding and, you know, this type of background is absolutely key, because it's not just a matter of plugging something into your, you know, ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude or Grok or whatever AI tool of choice you're using. It's really, I think, something higher in level. I think prompting is an important component. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, AI is just a tool. You know, it's just another tool in your tool belt, maybe a more modern tool. You know, maybe you look at it that way. But, you know, what do they say? Measure twice and cut once, right? The mm-hmm. best saw in the hands of somebody that doesn't know what they're doing is worthless. So I think, you know, wielding the tool wisely is very important. So that's really interesting. So as far as, you know, maybe specific tools that you see translators using today, or as far as different components to these tools that you think are important to be effective, what do you see there?
So in our industry, we have DeepL. Obviously, DeepL is a powerful translation engine. We have a very interesting tool on the market created by a Belgian entrepreneur, and it's called WordScope. And WordScope is the first CAT tool. CAT stands for computer-aided translation or computer-assisted translation. And what WordScope does is just integrate the ChatGPT interface and DeepL, and obviously, you know, it's using the pro licenses of these tools. It just integrates it with the CAT tool. So you're effectively You know, most translation these days, Michael, it's not so much translation per se, it's more editing and supervision of the AI output. So you still need a human in the process, in the workflow. You can't just rely on the machine, but we do leverage these tools. So I use WordScope, I use ChatGPT a lot. I am a paid pro, I think it's a plus license that I have, so $20 a month. I have a customized GPT for my space, linguistic validation. I think all companies should have a sales GPT, a marketing GPT. You know, you can have just 5 GPTs. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago, and one of the best talks on SEO actually told me that of a team of 20, he'd fired 3 people, and he'd leveraged the AI tools to do the jobs of 3 people. Now that's sad for those 3 people and their families. They need to, you know, find the work. But it was just very interesting what this entrepreneur could do. Swiss entrepreneur based in Colorado, talking about personal branding and SEO for companies. So I think for me, the tool is about working smarter, not harder, Michael. I think we need to just use these tools. Tech is part of our life, whether we like it or not. So if you're of the attitude the tech is taking my work and just running away and being afraid of it, you've already failed. You know, if you don't even show up to try, you've already failed. So those of you listening who may be a little reticent about using the tools, my advice, my tip is just grab the bull by the horns, just lean into the AI, use it for productivity. You still have an expertise. You know, each and every one of us are a personal brand. Software Oasis is your personal brand. The Entrepreneurial Translator is mine. It's heavily founder-centric in our lives and what we've done in our lives. So I think if we use it as standalone personal branding in consulting and service provision, it doesn't matter if it's services or products, then success is guaranteed, Michael.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And I think a lot of, at the end of the day, a lot of these AI agents are really, important components of, figuring out that next step in very specialized capabilities that these AI solutions can, tasks that they can actually perform. You know, it's not really replacing individuals as much as augmenting a lot of the capabilities. And at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not naive. I understand that some, tasks will be replaced by AI, and I think everybody understands that. But I think, if you look at a lot of, if you look at in the early days of publishing, there were people that actually, loaded lead type into a typesetting machine to run the offset presses, and then things went from there to desktop publishing, and from desktop publishing to digital publishing, and then I think we've had all of these evolutions and paradigm shifts in tech, and I think it's the same thing now. I think it's just like you said, something to grab hold of, learn about, be at the forefront of to make sure you're going to be relevant in the years to come. So something else that I noticed in what you're doing, I know you're working with a lot of founders and your focus is on helping some of these six-figure founders scale to seven figures and beyond using AI and all of that. So can you kind of bullet point for our listeners maybe some of the details of your approach and some of the strategies that you employ to help these founders get from where they are to where they would hope to be?
Yeah, sure. So we are in discussions with a multi-six founder. This prospect makes $700,000. No marketing, just word of mouth. He has a linguistic validation company, Cognitive Debriefing, based in Calgary. The founder is Pakistani, but lives in Riyadh. And we basically adopt an approach to help them scale by teaching them to be a KPI, which is a key person of influence. KPI can also mean key performance indicator. But KPI, it's all about getting the 5 P's. You've got to have your elevator pitch down very nicely. You've got to be publishing content. You know, if you want to build an authority-based business, you have to be an authority yourself. So you have to position yourself as the go-to expert, or what I call the shoulder-tapped expert. Make sure you're the one whose shoulder is tapped and not your competitor. And just being very consistent in publishing your content, Michael, you've got to get out on video. There's got to be a KPI on video who's usually the founder. I've seen some businesses where the founder is not too happy about going out on video. And you know, I myself don't like speaking to camera, but it's just something you have to do.
Sure.
We're speaking to camera now, although I believe this is just an audio podcast, but you know, at least we can see each other, and we're showing up to do this, to produce this asset. And then another thing is we teach them how to build business assets such as a quiz. So you can use quiz software, for example. ScoreApp is a very popular software, LeadHook. iBuckets by Ran Levesque has just been sold to ScoreApp. That's a big deal that went down just recently. So we give our clients the opportunity of just building assets that they can just pull out of their sleeve. And, you know, when not immediately, you don't sort of meet a prospect and immediately hit them with a quiz. But that's more middle of funnel content, you know, after the conversation is just a little warm and you're getting closer to a sales, closing a sale. An email list is a huge asset. I mean, you and I both have email lists. I know we did a newsletter swap quite recently.
Sure.
And just leveraging other people's audiences, you know, you can buy other people's, you can buy traffic doing paid ads. You can borrow another person just doing these little flips and leveraging someone else's audience. You have a very aligned audience, a different industry in tech, and mine is language provision. So, you know, it's an ideal swap for a partnership is that we don't compete in the same space. So we can help each other. So we teach people how to build an email list, which is through magnets. A quiz is a magnet, a downloadable PDF, an ebook, a guide, a how-to guide. You know, I published a book last year on how to find more direct clients. That's a little low-cost magnet that I use to attract customers. And just networking, Michael, you just have to go to the events. You need to put in the time and just go. It is tiring putting in the time and travel, but the connections I've made at in-person events, it's just gold dust, Michael. The conversations
you're having, you know this. Just getting out there and, you know, face-to-face, meeting with people and developing relationships is so important. And
I think,
you know, just like you mentioned, obviously, you know, our community and your community, very different, but, you know, we can both add value to one another's community. And I think at the end of the day, even if just one person listens to this podcast and walks away with something that's going to help propel their business forward, goal accomplished. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. And, really, really exciting stuff. So, now, I know you also, I believe, host a podcast. Tell our audience, just a little bit of a shameless plug, can you tell our audience a little bit about your podcast and the types of topics that you cover and what they might learn by tuning in?
Yes, that's very kind. So my podcast is called Freelancer Training on How to Find More Direct Clients. That title is a reference to most language service providers. They like to work with agencies for starters, and then you have to kind of graduate to the upper end, which is direct clients and cutting out the middleman. So we discuss entrepreneurship. We discuss marketing strategies such as quiz marketing, email marketing, building magnets, building an opt-in on your website. We discuss SEO, on-page SEO, indexing your website on Google, forcing traffic and eyeballs. So any aspect of online business, if you're interested in hopefully you will be doing a guest episode soon and sharing your expertise very soon.
Absolutely.
And that's what we talk about. Yeah, I'm on Spotify, I'm on Apple Podcasts, I'm on Google Podcasts as well. So I think it's easy to find me. And you know, podcasting is a great way to meet business partners, as we've met through this podcast. And you know, it's just a very nice contact to have. And you know, whenever you write to me, I know who you are. We've spoken online and we haven't met in person, but hopefully one day we will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is so interesting from whence podcasting or from where it came. You know, obviously in the early days, Apple was podcasting. And, you know, Spotify hit the scene and grew the whole ecosystem. Obviously, Google, being Google, jumped in and, you know, we've seen some amazing things there. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it helps to expand the whole ecosystem, which is only great for everyone. But, you know, we actually, you know, and I'll be upfront with you, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes it's jumping a little bit outside of your comfort zone and, yeah, you know, finding different things that you can do that can propel your business forward that you may not typically do, that really help to get you to where you want to get to. And, you know, when I launched the podcast a few years back, I mean, I had quite honestly never done any type of public speaking, any type of, you know, radio, TV, anything like that. And I said to myself, I'm going to do this. And I guess I need a microphone. So that was really the beginning. And here we are, close to 150 episodes later, and it's been a great experience. So if anyone out there is, you know, has that idea in the back of their head that podcasting may be something you want to explore, it absolutely is a fantastic way to grow your business. So you mentioned a bunch of different things there, as to different ways and different strategies and tips and techniques for growing businesses that you share on your podcast. Could you bullet point just a few as to what you see as some of the most effective techniques that you like to start with as kind of like the lowest hanging fruit that might provide some actionable ideas for some of the people listening to this episode?
Yeah, thank you. So I think the lowest hanging fruit is probably a lead magnet. So if you have a website, you don't have an opt-in. Now, the first thing I look for on a website is an opt-in above the fold, which is before I have to scroll downwards. So I like to see a hero image maybe on the left and then an opt-in and email capture box on the right. And I like to be offered the chance of giving my email in exchange for something of value. You know, you just solve a quick win for me. And you know, if I'm looking at Software Oasis, I would want to get a quick solution, something that moves me a little bit along. I'm not a natural techie, so you know, I'd be interested in that kind of solution. Another strategy I've had a lot of success, Michael, is building quizzes for clients. So this is essentially market research. It's essentially talking to your audience and trying to work out what the pain points are, what the pillar problems are, what keeps people up at night. And then you position yourself. Hopefully you have a signature solution that comes in and solves a lot of those problems. So a quiz can be free on a tool such as Tally. Tally.so is a free little bit of software. You can attach a low-cost offer to that. And then you have more paid options such as ScoreApp. Another tool is LeadsHook. I worked with a lady who disliked ScoreApp intensely and just preferred to use LeadsHook. I quite like ScoreApp, and I'm an affiliate marketer for them, an affiliate business partner. So I think you can have a quiz running on the banner of your website and just be attracting prospects to you, or you can pull it out mid-conversation when you've had an initial contact, and maybe you go to a sales meeting and you say, well, hey, just tell me a bit more about yourself with this quiz, and ultimately I want to know who you are, who you serve, and what the outcome of your service is. So it's really outcomes-based selling. You know, if I'm selling you a mattress, I won't sell you the mattress. I'll be selling you a good night's sleep, which is the outcome of buying the mattress. Sure. And you know, that's basically a couple of things. An email list, I think, is a wonderful asset because you have the opportunity of talking to your audience daily. And I know your email list is larger than mine. It's a fantastic asset to have, and it's something you build up over a number of years.
Yeah, it's something that happens one subscriber at a time, and it's not a, a destination. It's a journey. So
it's a very slow journey. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think
for
at the end of the day, with email marketing, obviously, or an email list, it's every single individual, every single interaction that you have with other organizations, I think if you think of it this way, most people that you're interacting with may know about you. They may be interested in what you're doing, but they may not need your product or service today. And by keeping in touch, you know, providing valuable content to everyone that's on your list, at the point where they do need whatever it is that you're offering, well, guess what? They already know you. You've been in front of them for days, weeks, years. And when they're ready to pull the trigger, hopefully you're the one that they decide to move forward with, because you're establishing a relationship with someone. So sure. It's very, very important. So,
yeah, that's very true. As you say, email marketing is it's a gradual process. You need to offer things for free in return, and it's gradually nurturing, as you say, until the person is happy to buy from you. I'm in the process of pivoting my audience, Michael. I'm moving away from online language service providers to this new space, linguistic validation, cognitive debriefing. So I'm in the process of, you know, pivoting my business assets to what I think is the space for me in the next few years. I'm turning 50 this year, so I still need to be rolling 15 years or more. So, you know, it's important to stay relevant and competitive. We use a tool called ActiveCampaign, which is one of the tools on the market. I know there are others. Kit is another one. Possibly we'll move over to Kit at some point. And these programs charge you based on the number of contacts you're allowed to use. It's typically, you know, per 1,000 or 2,000 contacts. And I run a lot of lists. Even my service provision business, I use this to keep in touch with those customers I haven't spoken to in a while. And it's just a very nice feeling that you have the option of talking to a one-to-many situation, and the fields just populate. The name field is typically percentage, name, percentage, and then that just auto-populates. And it does look as if you are speaking personally to the person when you receive the email with your name on it. So that's a wonderful piece of tech, and whoever invented that, I'm sure, deserves to make a lot of money.
Yeah, and I know ActiveCampaign well. They've actually participated in some of our webinars in the past. Casey Hill over at ActiveCampaign, and I think at one point Zhao Fong over at ActiveCampaign was on one of our podcasts. So they have a tremendous product, and you know, you picked a great platform there. And I think one of the interesting things about ActiveCampaign or any of these email, ActiveCampaign is obviously more than just an email marketing platform, but any of these channels, it's an owned channel. It's something that no one can ever take away from you. And if you think about it as a creator, you know, at the end of the day, any of these other channels, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, you know, whatever may be popular today or not popular, you know, you think back to some of the channels like MySpace and some of the other, you know, places like that, that they're not only aren't around, but don't exist anymore. You know, you can build up a tremendous following on some of these platforms only to wake up and find out that, hey, the government just outlawed your platform, or, hey, this platform doesn't exist anymore. You know, they did an IPO and it didn't go so well. So with your email marketing list, it's yours. It's your content. You own it, you know, for as long as you're running your business. You can always market to the same individuals. So I think always keep in mind that all of these other channels are a great doorway or a great opportunity to bring people into your ecosystem. But at the end of the day, you don't own any of these channels. And I think you always have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story, just very quickly, Michael, is don't build a business on rented land, what you just said.
Yeah.
TikTok was closed down just the other day. Trump reopened it a day later. You know, if you're building a business on these channels and they're closed down or outlawed, as you said, your business could go up in smoke. One of my business mentors, Amazon, closed down his book book sales. And luckily, he was selling the book off his website as well, so he was okay. But, you know, he was dependent on Amazon there for a while. And he's actually the one who taught me don't build your business on rented land. So
yeah, and I think, you know, what's so interesting is, you know, maybe some of this is a hard lesson to learn. But sometimes it's hard to learn some of these lessons from others. You know, you really need to discover on your own. And entrepreneurship, as you shared, is a journey. It's something that you iterate over many years to get to where you're going to, and not something that just happens overnight at the end of the day. So if, you know, obviously you sit in a really unique position based on your background and the segment of the industry that you're in and heading towards, but are there some trends that really excite you that kind of pointed you in this direction that you see happening over the next several years that you think are going to impact our world?
Well, I think we will see more tech and not less tech. So if we can leverage the tech, then we should do so. But I think we will always see, I'm very interested in the bridge between the machine and the human. I mean, I'd like to do further work on this bridge between machine translation, for example, and human customer service. I think that's a very interesting hybrid business model. That's what we're seeing in the online language services industry. And the people doing best, actually, Michael, in my space are those that look upon this with an entrepreneurial mindset. There will always be opportunities for multilingual, communicative people with a business mindset, and less so if you think of this time for money working. And I try and get people out of this time for money mindset and just think about the outcome of what they're selling. I'm very much in favor of lifestyle businesses and, you know, 5 or 6 hours a day. I don't like burnout. I don't like hustle and grind. I'm all about, you know, wellness and a nice, healthy work-life balance, family time, those kind of things. So I think the trend will be hopefully more of that, and more, we could call that a lifestyle business sweet spot, I guess, which for me is 5 or 6 hours a day. I mean, we're just coming up to 4 o'clock at the end of our conversation, and that's a pretty good day for me. You know, I started at 8:30, and, you know, I'm ready for something else. I'm ready to switch off and recharge for tomorrow. So, you know, this hustle and grind culture, and I see a lot of influences peddling that, and I really raise my eyebrows at that. And it's not all about hustle and grind. And I think age is also a factor, Michael. I mean, you and I are up towards the latter end of our careers, and not sure. 20-year-olds starting out. So it's not the same energy levels you're having. And I talking to, you know, entrepreneurs my age, I think they, especially in the tech space, they do feel the pinch from younger colleagues. App development, for example, there's plenty of 20-year-olds just bringing out apps very, very quickly. And it's a very changing world. So it's constantly changing. SEO, for example, is very difficult to find an expert in SEO because it's changing from week to week. So I always raise my eyebrows when someone supposedly calls themselves an expert in SEO. It's a very difficult, fast-moving space. So I think those are the trends. I'd like to see more hybrid, more people talking about the human leveraging the AI tool. And I remember Seth Godin talking about a tool that could mimic his voice to the point where his wife couldn't, I don't remember the name of the tool, but his wife couldn't tell the difference between his real voice and the AI voice. So,
yeah, yeah, I think maybe 11 Labs that you're thinking about.
11 Labs, that's
yeah,
the one.
They,
that's
they put
exactly
out an amazing
right.
tool. And
that's the
you
one.
Know, on the SEO front, what's interesting is, and I think this is a telling fact, you know, over this past year, we've seen traditional organic search on the decline. You know, literally annually, traditional organic search is declining by 25%. And on the flip side of that, we're seeing searches that begin with AI assist. So, you know, starting with Gemini or Grok or Perplexity or whatever your favorite tool is. You know, most of us are using some sort of AI to start our days, and AI assisted search is growing by 35% annually. So it's just a staggering fact. And organizations like you know, for anybody that's familiar with HubSpot, they've literally lost, I believe, in the last 2 months, 50% of their organic traffic. So, you know, through traditional search. So that's a number that, you know, people need to get in front of. And one of the reasons we actually put out all kinds of courses on tech trends and things like that, we just launched a new course, you know, kind of focusing on some of the strategies we've used here to get ahead of AI search and all of that. So anyways, Jason Willis Lee, really a great deep dive on a lot of some very interesting topics in AI and language services. I really appreciate it. And thanks for joining us from the Entrepreneurial Translator today on the Consulting Spotlight.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael. It's my pleasure.
And we'll leave in the show notes a link for anybody that would like to reach out to Jason and you know, figure out some different opportunities to help grow your organization through through some of the techniques that they're using over there that are helping others get to where they want to get to. So thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for tuning in to the Software Oasis Podcast Network. With more than 200,000 listeners each month, you're invited to join our engaged community of B2B founders and executives at our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. Reserve your comp pass today. Get ahead with real AI strategies. Join the first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to claim your spot today.